From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Happy New Year. At the start of this year, we bid farewell to the tumultuous 2019, and we look ahead to 2020 with a mixture of anticipation and high suspense. This week on Register Radio, we take a look at the highlights of the last year with Register Managing Editor Tom Wehner. And then we take a tally, a year in review, for the pro-life movement with Loretta Brown, Register staff writer. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, joined by my co-host Matthew Bunsen. Hi, Matthew.
Hello. Happy New Year.
It is a new year. I hope it will be a happy one. The last year has been a tough one for Catholics and for the country. It's going to be a memorable year, sometimes for the worst of ways, from the sex abuse crisis of this year to the controversies at the Vatican with the Pan-Amazonian Synod, to in the end of the year, the impeachment of President Donald Trump. It was really a year of a lot of low points, but it was also a year of holiness and heroism, and we'll talk about some of those highlights with Tom Wehner. Hi, Tom. Welcome back to Register Radio.
Thanks. It's always great to be with you.
So, Tom, every year at the end of the year, actually, it's usually our first January issue of the print product, we do this pictorial review of the last year. And you really take a lead in putting together that issue, choosing the photographs. And you and Matthew have a hand at writing this essay that describes our pictures. And so when we take a look at the nation in a pictorial sense of the last year in 2020, what are some of the highlights?
As always, you mentioned we do a review of the year. We look at the stories that were of special interest to our readers, which is to look at the stories which may not have been the greatest news to the general public, but a lot of to our readers as well. And so, for instance, on the national stage, we looked at something that didn't get a lot of notice in the secular press, but for the first time, we covered the Mass of the Americas, which is a traditional Mass celebrated by San Francisco Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione at the Basilica in Washington, D.C., the shrine of the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception. And it was covered by EWTN, and we covered it as well. But that was a momentous occurrence for our readers as well as for the church at large because of what it represented on such a national stage and to have this broadcast, as it were. We also covered on the national stage the ongoing sex abuse crisis, which kicked off in February with Cardinal Theodore McCarrick being returned to the lay state, which is almost unheard of from Pope Francis, returned him to the lay state, and where he is today, he's living in seclusion in Kansas. And one of the other big stories, which was kind of an up and a down story, was the beatification and subsequent delay of Archbishop Fulton Sheen's cause for canonization.
That's right.
Which is now in limbo. The necessary requirements were approved for his beatification, which was hastily put together in mid to late December in the Diocese of Peoria, Illinois, and then subsequently put on hold. So.
Right, and you know that,
so those,
that nation,
were, those were some of the stories.
Yeah, that nation page. I remember putting it together as President Trump was being impeached, and so we have some of the newspaper images around. I guess the most national secular newspaper images, the front pages. That's one of the pictures that we put on that page because obviously it's one of the biggest events of the year, and we could not cover that in this issue, but we ended this the Nation review on a more positive note, where we look at some of the Supreme Court decisions of the year, and that's another aspect of our year in review is the things that the courts chose to hear, and some of them do relate to life, the Louisiana abortion law. Will be looked at shortly, and so that's a part of our year-end review. There's a really great picture of the Supreme Court building with carnations laid out in front of it in remembrance of of abortions, the 3,000 abortions that occur in the U.S. every day. We'll talk more with Loretta Brown in the next segment about the pro-life movement in a year review. But Matthew, we do a page on the Vatican and a summary of what happened a year in picture at the Vatican. And you were in Rome for a good bit of the year. What are some of the highlights that you think of when you think of the year in review for the Vatican?
Well, I think Edward Penton, in his roundup of Pope Francis's year, said it almost perfectly. He said that the year began with a focus on the clergy sexual abuse crisis and sort of ended with it as well. When the year began with Pope Francis convoking the special gathering of leaders from around the world, especially the heads of episcopal conferences and experts in sex abuse, for that meeting that then led to a series of papal enactments that we're still really coming to terms with, canonically and even spiritually in the Church. And then it ended with the Holy Father lifting the pontifical secret to allow more transparency in cases. Between all of that, we had the Pan-Amazonian Synod that was dominated by controversy, and who would have imagined at the start of that synod that the word that would dominate the whole month was Pachamama. These idol statues, however you want to describe them, that began popping up at all of these papal events, the synod events, were taken from the church right near the Vatican, hurled into the Tiber, were saved from the Tiber, and that was almost the epitome of the controversy that surrounded the Pan-Amazonian. But Tom, for you, what were some of your highlights for this year, even beyond these major stories?
Personally.
Well, I think that as we look at how what the Register's mission is to view the news of the world through the lens of the Church, we always that we keep in mind that there are going to be mostly setbacks in this life, as the author J.R.R. Tolkien called this life the long defeat. And so as people of faith and as newspaper people of faith, we try to do our best to see the hope and the joy amid some of these bad things and some of these scandalous things that are currently going within and without the Church. So, for instance, yes, we did report very, very extensively the sex abuse crisis and some of the things that were going on at the Vatican, which is what we're charged to do. But some of the stories that really jumped out at me were the Vatican story on the saint for our time, Saint John Henry Newman, who is he stands as a beacon of hope, especially in our confusing times, which are dominated by a news cycle which promotes news which really isn't news, but you're trying to, as a news outfit, that we're trying to fight the toxicity that exists in social media. And so so some of the other stories that really may not have been dominating the headlines, but in the Register that especially appealed to me were the series that we did on the Real Presence, in which we had multiple bishops and cardinals discussing ways in which a church that collectively has trouble believing in the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist, how can we regain a sense of the sacred? Because that's a lot more eternal than some of the scandals du jour that we see every day. So that one really jumped out at me. And to a lesser extent, one of the things, the big spectacle that I found this year was the fire at the Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris, which...
Right.
It's 900 years old, and it stands as a beacon of the faith to faithful people and atheists alike. And to see that ancient facade on fire was a sight to behold, as I'm sure
absolutely
you remember talking about it as well.
Tom, you touch on that, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because of all the images of this year, that image just stands out to me so much as the year. It's like faith in flames kind of thing, I like what the Register did with it. I was really happy. I think this was your idea, in fact, to focus on our year-end edition on four heroic faces of faith. We called them four Catholic witnesses who gave us hope in 2019. And it was really a great story. It was a roundup of the people who we covered throughout the year. One was Father Jean-Marc Fournier, who was the fire chief who rescued the Blessed Sacrament from the Cathedral of Notre Dame and many other artifacts, the tunic of St. Louis the Ninth and the crown of thorns. That he was one of the people we highlighted in this review. Abby Johnson, who did the unplanned movie, who really brought her story of the horrors of being a Planned Parenthood director to the big screen and opened many people's eyes as she did so. This young man, Kendrick Castillo, who lost his life in a school shooting in Colorado. He was a Catholic, a Knight of Columbus, and who shielded other students and so was a hero, truly losing his life in the process. And then finally, Melissa Villalobos, who called on St. John Henry Newman in prayer in a time of crisis in her life and was healed, a true miracle. And really, you can't get much better than that as a witness of faith. In a time of crisis, to witness that you should pray and call to prayer and miracles do happen. So that's how we chose to picture the front page for the end of the year. Tom, I'm always grateful for the job that you do. Steady is your hand as you close each and every print edition of the Register and make sure that we have wonderful news on the website. So, as always, thank you for being the managing editor and being my right-hand man.
Well, it's my pleasure. I mean, I'm coming up on my 15th anniversary with the Register. I can say that compared to my days in the secular news, it doesn't compare, and that's a very positive thing.
Awesome.
Compare in a very, very good way. Yeah.
When I come back, Matthew and I take a look ahead at 2020 and the pro-life movement with Register staff writer Loretta Brown. This is Register Radio. More when we return.
If you're like me, you probably go through the same thing every Christmas. So many names on the list and not sure of what to get them. This year, I'm giving something special. Subscriptions to EWTN's National Catholic Register. It's the award-winning newspaper that's filled with solid Catholic reporting, Catholic education, book reviews, entertainment, travel, and more. If I order a subscription for myself or give one as a gift, I get a DVD of EWTN's original movie, Mother Cabrini, absolutely free. And I save on every additional subscription that I give. Here's how to order.
Get 26 issues of EWTN's National Catholic Register for less than $2 per issue. Just go to ncregister.com/radio. Save even more and get $10 off on each additional gift subscription. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen. We're also joined by the Register's national correspondent, Loretta Brown. 2019 was a really big year for the pro-life movement. It included unexpected success of the movie Unplanned. It included an awful year in a way for Planned Parenthood, who always seems to be able to rebound from their own messes. And then it also included the legal and legislative struggle over abortion across all of the states, pretty much. Loretta, you've been covering the pro-life movement for many years and for the last year and a half or so for the Register. You recently wrote a story about Planned Parenthood in their year in 2019. It's called Planned Parenthood Hunkers Down on Abortion. So give us a highlight of that very bad year and how Planned Parenthood was able to rebound.
Yeah, well, 2019 was certainly just a very bumpy, rough year for the abortion group. And I highlighted first of all, I think a very significant thing for them was the departure of their president, Leanna Wen, who's a medical doctor, and they had made a big deal about choosing her because, you know, their mantra was abortion is healthcare, and here's a doctor well-versed with healthcare who, you know, is all pro-abortion and able to speak to all these, you know, different aspects of healthcare and abortion being healthcare. And it was not a good look. As I emphasized, she kind of, even from the get-go, had an idea of having Planned Parenthood really double down on that wider-ranging healthcare approach. So she was definitely very pro-abortion, but she was also, she wanted to expand to have them offer different services, different kinds of, you know, drug testing and treatments and things that went beyond abortion, and they did not like that at all. And I think it was interesting because they often say, oh, abortion is just 3% of what we do. But in dismissing her, she made it very clear that the disagreement was about, she viewed it as a wide-ranging healthcare organization, and they viewed it as an abortion and an abortion advocacy organization. That was the disagreement. So that was not a good PR look for them at all. And right. they even lost some of their very strong, vocal, intense employees during her tenure. I remember seeing articles about the kind of the tempest inside Planned Parenthood over this past year. And then in addition to that, another very significant blow they suffered was the loss of Title X funding. And they, that was very significant in so many ways. I think it just, it's the first real chance that the shot where, like, Planned Parenthood has been defunded in some way. I think there had been talk, there's always talk of defunding Planned Parenthood, you know, in the pro-life movement, but this was actually, they actually did it. They actually took away a little bit of their funding, this Title X funding. And so that was another instance where, you know, HHS pointed out, like, they were choosing to place, they said, a higher priority on the ability to refer for abortion rather than having the funds to continue to do these non-abortion services, which is where, you know, Planned Parenthood had always said that Title X funding was going. So that was kind of why I focused on them doubling down on abortion in this piece, because these losses, these blows to them just showed again and again, they are an abortion group. That is their number one focus. That is, you know, they will say all sorts of things about health care. But at the end of the day, they want to promote abortion, unrestricted abortion. And that was clear in other things. As I mentioned, they sent talking points to Governor Northam after he made those comments that seemed to be saying a baby born alive could be left to die after an abortion, you know, failed abortion. And a FOIA request actually showed that Planned Parenthood, one of the Planned Parenthood employees had sent talking points about, oh, there's no such thing as abortion up till birth, you know, just kind of helping with that. And that was another thing that I think there was a dialogue with the pro-life movement and Planned Parenthood abortion advocates, debate over this infanticide idea. And I point out in my story that the CDC has 143 instances between the years of 2003 and 2014 that show that an infant was born alive after an abortion attempt. And so this talking point, you know, is questionable to say the least. And it's just, but yeah, the infanticide conversation was something that I don't think was a good look for Planned Parenthood, and especially this coming out now that they sent talking immediately, you know, so fast they sent talking points about, oh, let's help Governor Northam, who, if you look at his exact words, he definitely did seem to be saying that, you know, if that's what the mother and the family desired, that a discussion would ensue between the physician and the mother. You know, what's to discuss? There's a live baby.
Well, and we saw across the country a variety of legislative enactments trying to enshrine, basically, abortion up to birth, didn't we?
Yes. Yeah, so that's another thing I noted in my story was that prior to Northam's comments, and they were very ill-timed, there was this push. New York, Illinois passed a similar extreme law that basically unrestricted abortion, as I mentioned. And these were bills that Planned Parenthood pushed, celebrated, you know, have talking points around, because they're scared, definitely, about the future of Roe v. Wade. I think they just, given the dialogue around it. They were concerned in the makeup of the Supreme Court, the changing makeup. They are concerned, and so this discussion
brings us to 2020. Yeah. Really? Yes. What are we looking forward to in 2020 in the pro-life movement? You just mentioned some of the things that really are on the table. What do we expect?
Well, I think a lot of these discussions that I mentioned are going to continue about should there be a restriction on abortion. This is already, and this is something I appreciated, this has already been a discussion that's been asked to the 2020 Democratic candidates. This is something that President Trump has brought up. When should there be a restriction on abortion? The New York Times asked the 2020 Democrats this, and none of them, they couldn't answer the question about whether they opposed restrictions on abortion after the point of viability, which I feel that, you know, at least a few of them would have been able to, but the majority, the mainstream candidates couldn't say. Some of them ducked, like Biden didn't even address the question, but I'm looking forward to seeing, in relation to the election, the presidential election, more of this discussion, because I think definitely the presidential debates, this will come up. And I remember in 2016, we had some fiery exchanges on the topic, and I could definitely see, based on the way President Trump talks about it and the way the Democrats talk about abortion in relation to the Trump administration and the strides they've made, the different moves they've made on it, that this could be a national discussion. And I'm encouraged and excited about that, because I think when candidates debate on this, when this comes into the forefront, it's a chance for the pro-life movement to say, listen, here are the facts. Like, you know, there could be all these people saying, oh, President Trump is lying about, you know, a baby being able to be killed up to 9 months. But then there's that CDC statistic I mentioned. And that's an opportunity for the pro-life movement to say, hey, let's look at some of these facts. And there's also some polling that I think will come up and has come up again and again, especially with the Northam comments, about the majority of Americans definitely being against late-term abortion. So I am looking forward to the presidential election bringing these issues to the forefront and I know the pro-life movement will be fighting as well to have to bring up the late-term abortion extreme position of the Democrats. They already have been. I've seen an ad, I think actually like several ads. There's been a lot of messaging around it about, like, look at the position the 2020 Democrats are taking and how out of step it is. And there's also been just discussion of late-term abortion and answers to a lot of, you know, the objections you hear about life of the mother, different things. A lot of thought-out, reasoned pro-life physicians have been speaking to some of these talking points. So I see a lot of robust discussion. I'm also excited for the upcoming March for Life, the end of this month. Their theme is Life Empowers, Pro-Life is Pro-Woman. And I think it's a beautiful theme. I think it's very positive. I just like the idea of kind of reclaiming. I think pro-abortion people always were pro-women. They're kind of coming back and reclaiming, well, you know, pro-life is pro-woman, and they're making a case for that. So
it's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've been covering the March for Life for many years, so we're looking forward to the access that you'll bring to the Register as you're there in Washington and talking to people there at the march itself. And, of course, also this month in January, it's expected that the Supreme Court will be hearing the arguments of the case involving the Louisiana law that requires abortionists to have admitting privileges at local hospitals. So there's a chance that the courts could weigh in on a very important abortion law. And it could be a first in a long while. They've refused to hear some other challenges to ultrasound requirement laws in Kentucky, I think, in December. So this is a big moment to be there in Washington and to be watching on the national scale the movement, advancements in the pro-life movement. So, Loretta, as always, thank you for what you do. For your coverage of the national scene, and especially the coverage of the pro-life movement. It's going to be a tough year watching the presidential debates and watching the candidates and and of course the ongoing impeachment stuff. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, to check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.